everybody, and welcome to the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. I am your host, Mr. Prince Muragori. I am the resident economist at the Kenyan Wall Street, and I am also a chief economist at eConsult Africa, where we provide research through insight. Now, as you know, we have been in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, and most of us are now feeling the full brunt of its impact. And with this comes the question that many people have on their minds: what is going to be the economic impact of COVID-19 on individuals, on businesses, on the nation at large? And this means, therefore, that we need to hold insightful discussions, data-driven discussions on studies that have been done to try and address this question. And today we are very lucky to have Mark Kaigwa, who is the founder of Nendo, with us, and he's going to talk about a report that Nendo did on COVID-19 and specifically on its impact on consumers and corporates in Kenya. So Mark Kaigwa, very welcome to the podcast today. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Thanks for having me. And yeah, big fan of Kenyan Wall Street and just everything that you guys are part of. So really happy to be here.
Asante. We're also very, very happy to have you, and particularly an expert on the digital space, talking about how COVID-19 is going to impact, you know, various sectors on the economy. But before we go on to the report that Nendo did, perhaps we could just start with you introducing yourself and telling us a bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so I think to start off with a bit about Nendo and some background on us, we are a research and marketing firm. And so our key phrase of what we do is we deliver insights that drive income and impact for our clients. And so for us, insight really is the key. So we're insatiably curious. We're always asking questions, always observing, and frequently just gathering up data on what people do all across the continent. We're excited that we're not just a Kenyan business, not an East African business, but we work across the continent. We've got projects going live in Nigeria and Uganda, I believe, in a month's time. We wrapped up some work in places like Mali and Senegal a couple months ago, done from here in Nairobi with a couple of freelancers and what we call nomads, who are consultants for us, based out of West Africa as well, to sense check. But we're very much just a business that's really passionate about driving change, behavior change that drives sales, using the internet, using social media, using digital platforms and digital channels. And then at the same time, research is kind of the name of our game. We're constantly studying people's behavior and responsibly sourcing and analyzing their data. So just to give examples of some of the work that we do for companies like Safaricom, NCBA, PSI, and Safaricom being telco, NCBA being banking, and PSI being, we call it like sexual and reproductive health in a sentence. Yeah, we're delivering COVID-19 specific insights on just different markets and different consumer segments, and that looks like reports. It looks like sets of recommendations and tactics in the marketing and branding space that they can take to deliver products that make sense and that actually deliver value, and then also surfacing different key issues. So looking up millions of posts from social media and the web, and then analyzing them and generating reports. So that's Nendo's calling card. We've always been a firm that stays on the cutting edge of what people are publishing and saying, and then using that not just to report on numbers, but to say this is the opportunity. And when we made our COVID-19 10 sector report, it's been just being very true to who Nendo has been since the beginning. When we launched the trend report in 2014, and almost every year since then, we put out a big project into the public, and typically it gets all sorts of global and regional media coverage, because we're amongst just a few companies on the continent who do this sort of work, at least both privately for clients who pay, and then publicly to shape perceptions, shape policy, and shape the way the, I guess, the nation looks at itself.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for that introduction. And speaking of research and reports and insight, there's this report which you're going to be discussing today that was released by NENDO a while ago, entitled Impact of COVID-19 on Consumers and Corporates in Kenya. And the reason particularly we decided to have you talk about this report is because obviously COVID-19 is the conversation around most people's minds and households. And it's come to a time where we have been in the situation long enough to start feeling some of its impact on our daily lives, on our businesses, on our family lives. And so perhaps you can give us an overview of what this report was about, what was the rationale behind it, and what did you hope to achieve with it?
Yeah, sure. So, I think our rationale, that of my team and I, was I think immediately it happened, we started gathering insights. And so that meant that, like I said, we typically are every single day looking at what are millions of Kenyan internet users saying? What are they commenting about, complaining about, criticizing, discussing what's positive, what's negative, what's neutral, and then using machine learning oftentimes just make sure we can cut through the noise, but also for things such as Sheng, which is Kenya's slang, that we're able to just get a better read on how people feel. So as the coronavirus started to spread and the first case was announced on the 13th of March, we got to work just knowing that we had an opportunity to shape the whole country's view of this as far as the digital sector is concerned. So yeah, like I said, when you work with you know companies like Safaricom, like we do, we also, you know, they put you through your paces. So this is a public report. The more detailed private ones, you know, go as high up as the executive committee at Safaricom. Are really proud to work and support their research department there and a couple of our clients. So the genesis of this was really, let's look at what's happening and determine this from a consumer point of view and a corporate point of view. So consumer, the thinking was, look, their behavior, their routines have been affected. Their health and well-being have been affected. Mm. Corporates, it's that business is no longer as usual. And so those two are the springboard we jumped off of. And we said, let's look at 10 sectors. Let's look at mobility, retail, financial services, you know, all the way down to how do people generate income at this particular time. And so what I've heard people talk about our infographic and say that, you know, it's winners and losers. And while I don't dispute that, that's even a term that we used internally at some point. I think, you know, the reason we're sensitive not to call it that is ultimately, you know, I think all of society in the world has lost in this case. You know, we've lost so much, and you know, that's not just in the death toll or the people who are ill and the markets and just the way things have changed. But to us, it's the fact that demand is the actual driver of economies. And so for us, we saw rising demand and then disrupted demand. Whether that demand comes back is hard to tell, but it's certainly been disrupted.
Okay, awesome. Actually, by categorizing it into impact on demand, it was very objective and it shows in a very systematic way how exactly businesses would be impacted and individuals as well, because as you say, demand is one indicator that definitely determines or influences overall economic well-being. And demand is also the precursor of supply. Before you have any supply going, you need to have people demanding whatever good or service that you're providing. And now let's get to it. You've mentioned that the report looked at some 10 sectors. You looked at mobility, retail, financial services and payments, connectivity, education, entertainment, food and supplies, communications, healthcare, and finally income generation. What was the rationale behind these particular themes, these 10 themes? Was there any reason that you chose these sectors, or it was just, you know, they were a good representation of the overall economy?
Well, I'll be very honest with you. It's there's no magic sauce with that. I think we I definitely give credit to my colleague and teammate at NENDO, a lady called Kanorio Gitonga, who served as a project lead on this, because I think I just exhaled so much in our initial conversation it's not like I'd come down from Mount Sinai with these Ten Commandments or anything like that, but I did have these intuitions and inclinations, and I consulted widely with my team and the internal data team at Nendo. So I think the 10 are credit, I think, to just the editorial process we went through to try to put them in a way that was easy to have as buckets. So we saw even more areas of the economy that were affected. And I know some people have told me that we ended up, perhaps skipping some certain companies or certain activities. We've ended up updating this infographic, so some people may have downloaded it when it first came out. We've ended up making adjustments, and we have an entire dedicated landing page at nendo.co.ke/COVID, which is now where they can always get the latest version. So to that point, we looked at the 10 as being representative of the digital economy. Mm-hmm. And so digital in as far as it affects companies, the corporates, so to speak, and the consumers, or just the mass market. And we've even seen people make parallels between what we've shared here and Uganda and Rwanda and just other African countries. So we've been quite pleasantly validated that it's not just it uses Kenyan examples, sure, but it's not distinct or it's actually quite applicable to the time and what other African countries are doing and where they are.
Very well. So now we jump into the first bucket, let's call it that, a bucket, which is transport or mobility. We know that with the COVID-19 situation, we had most people being very cautious, especially towards public transport because of the risk of infection. And also the transport system as a whole was affected because of inter-county travel restrictions, also international travel restrictions. Many airlines are feeling the brunt of it. So kindly go over this bucket in terms of which sectors or individuals are experiencing the rising demand, and then compare that with the sectors that are having disrupted demand in the transport bucket.
Sure. Yeah. So I think for Kenya, like you said, just to sum it up, to start with disrupted demand, we're the home of mobile money. And so I think we'll come to that in some detail after. But if we just look at the disrupted demand sources, Egyptian bus hailing app Swivel had really begun to dominate and to establish themselves. And they saw a great drop. In fact, even their app, we noted a couple of weeks later, dropped out of the top 100 most downloaded apps in Kenya at the time. And we just saw a range of companies. So any travel website, any of the ride-hailing companies, Uber, Bolt, or Little Cabs, each of them all just finding a significant decrease in the number of rides per day. We felt that that's actually quite tough on those who, drivers and driver partners who'd gotten, financing. So you're looking at the Uber Chap Chaps, which are the really small, 1,000cc, it's not even 1,000cc, I think it's less, but the Suzuki Altos. So just, that's something we wanted to paint a picture of. When it came to rising demand, we were like, anybody on a motorbike right now is, in my views, an essential, worker or essential service. Mm-hmm. And the particular player that can solve for trust, and I think the best person who solved for trust so far has been Safe Border. The fact that they train their their riders to be respectful of traffic lights, to ride a bit slow, to carry themselves a certain way and deliver a certain brand experience, we felt that they have a particular unique place because of the safety standards they've imposed. Sendy has done this more on the logistics side, and in terms of B2B, has done some partnerships there. So we've expected them to see things pick up. And then in terms of inter-county movement being restricted, Kenya has a cessation of movement. That means people cannot cross county lines, as it stands now, for another 3 weeks or so, going into the beginning of June, as extended and announced by President Uhuru Kenyatta. Right now, I think we're recording this on the 20th of May. So I believe that was this last Sunday. So those factors meant that if you now need to do e-commerce for the rural areas, you can do it through a website like Kopia, who have a peer-to-peer network of, I believe it's, you know, some 10,000 plus agents countrywide.
Okay, so that's on the transport sector, and the sector that is very closely related to transport, of course, is the retail sector, where, you know, this is where we're talking about buying of everyday consumables, the commodities that we use every day. And so give us the situation on the retail and how COVID-19 is impacting that sector.
Yeah, I think retail was one which caught our attention very, very quickly, because this is where some of the biggest announcements had been taking place. And I was actually on a panel yesterday with one of the people here. But we think that this is, you know, Jumia has gone under fire for all sorts of reasons when it comes to their business model, their sustainability, their impact in Africa. But this is their calling card, and this is their moment. So, you know, they've partnered up with the incumbent large supermarket and hypermarket chain, Carrefour in Kenya. Obviously, it's a French brand, licensed or franchised in Africa by Majid Al Futtaim Foundation, or Majid Al Futtaim, is the institution based out of the Emirates, if I'm not mistaken, or just the mm-hmm. that area. So you have Jumia essentially partnering at that level. You had Tusky's partnering with Sendy, Naiba's partnering with Glovo, and then you just have, you know, all sorts of sub partnerships in there. So that's what we're seeing rising demand, e-commerce. We also think the person who hasn't been discussed as much is the kind of the kiosk owner. So this idea that the local kiosk, this is really their time to shine. I know I've shopped more at my local kiosk than ever before. And I even think that in the finance sense, that they will become a real key line of credit for a lot of people, especially if the economy doesn't pick up soon enough. So there's that element of just the social capital mm-hmm. there. We think pay-as-you-go will really begin to thrive as a model. So we think M-Copa, which is already an incumbent with solar power, but it's PayGo, Envirofit, and M-Gas. So this idea that for petroleum cylinders that are connected to the Internet of Things, that's an area we are expecting rising demand. And for customers to learn that I can pay, I don't know, as little as a shilling or 5 shillings to fry an egg. And that's the pace I'm going to go at. I'm going to kind of take it and pay as I go. Of course, in the end, it's significantly more expensive, but just the fact that you get the equipment, and in the case of M-Gas, you don't pay for the cylinder, you don't pay for the any of the technology, they provide that and refill it for you using the smart meter, but you pay per use. And so we think that's that may actually find that this is it's you know, a good time if they can ship and manufacture out of Asia and, you know, bring it here via, you know, sea or air freight. If they can solve the supply chain, I believe the demand will be there. Disrupted demand is shopping malls. We have shopping malls for clients. We have a couple of them. We think stalls downtown, places that depended on foot traffic, and then supermarkets also. They're just not seeing the traditional ways that they were expecting business. Maybe just to share some insights that I heard from the CEO of Tusky's. I mean, he talked about how the basket of goods right now has changed significantly. So, you know, Kenyans previously didn't really spend that much when it came to the basket of goods as far as hygiene. And now hygiene is looking at, you know, it's kind of in the 30%. So even went as far as to say in some cases people are looking for hygiene and spending on that before they spend on food. So 30% of the basket just being soap, hand wash, sanitizer, tissue, serviettes, and that sort of thing. So a very interesting set of shifts that are happening there in retail.
Interesting. Yeah, you're very right in terms of the physical malls where people had to go and shop really need to now partner with the delivery options, as you've mentioned, so that, you know, the customers who are at home can still get to access the services. But at the same time, as you have mentioned, it means there's an opportunity for the local producer or the local provider of these goods, because, you know, as you recall, there's a time the middle class in Kenya was really on a surge since 2015, and people really went to shop in malls and everything. But The COVID-19 situation has taught us rather that, you know, when things get really thick, what you have in your immediate environment is what can actually save you. That kidogo kiosk or mama mboga is the one that can provide you the services in a most convenient manner. So people definitely have also switched consumption patterns to a localized format. Moving on to the next sector, which is the financial services and payments. Of course, we know that the COVID-19 is causing big financial constraints. People are losing their jobs, and so people don't have a lot of disposable income. And so the people who perhaps had loans or other financial obligations are put on the spot. So perhaps you can just shed light on what the COVID-19 means for digital firms in this financial services and payments industry.
Yeah, sure. So I think in terms of financial services, you've hit the nail on the head. So I think for us, the biggest and most interesting one is the mobile money transfer side, because here we've seen the flow, and by flow I mean the ceiling. So there is a band of transactions that previously was free, and that was sending, at least on Safaricom, which is the market leader as far as mobile money in this part of the world and in the country. They, I believe, had 100 shillings or less as the limit of free transactions. And even then, I think you could only send a certain number of them. The number might be 5. And so when it was raised to 1,000 shillings, so moving from a dollar, so you could send amounts under a dollar, under 100 shillings for free, to under 1,000 shillings or under $10. That, I think, I mean, they've later come to say that they have, you know, gone at what sounds like significant possible like losses or, you know, unrealized income to provide that to Kenyans in this time. Platforms such as PesaLink as well, the bank-to-bank instant settlement money transfer service, have also waived their fees. And so that's a very interesting aspect of this, in terms of even when we go back to normal, Kenyans may have an expectation that I shouldn't have to pay for transactions under 1,000 shillings. And I hope Safaricom are getting used to that, because that may become the new normal. I think when it comes to cards, yes, your Visa and MasterCard, yeah, they're in the picture as well. But I expect that mobile money is basically, you know, the biggest. This has been the biggest boost to mobile money in my estimation, and it's quote unquote war against cash. Obviously, the more informal you go, the more the cash still prevails and exists. But this is an unprecedented. Oh boy, I've said the word unprecedented type. I think it's the one thing not to say right now. So. Yeah, so there is that to say. PesaPal, I think, is one of the big winners. I mean, they've been in this a decade plus. It's one of the biggest payment gateways in our region. And so I think for them, my eyes are on them for just some of the solutions and innovations that they launched, just because they've had a very long time and very deep integrations with banks and a range of different players. So expecting rising demand. For disruptive demand, I'd say the tech illiterate are the biggest people, I think, to just find challenges, because it's not that they necessarily have illiteracy in the definition, but more of just the fact that they're excluded from different digital services, now that you can't just walk in a bag, now that you can't just do certain activities the way we previously did, or you interact more with cash than you do digital currencies. And so people like that, I still have my concerns around them. I think the lending industry has seen some changes. So the DLAK, the Digital Lenders Association of Kenya, who are somewhat under fire from the central bank governor right now.
Yes,
they've
they
waived
are.
Late fees, but they are in for the fight of their lives, I think, with just the central bank governor right now he's not spared them any blushes in explaining exactly how he feels about them. But I know Tala, you know, presented and launched a $6 million rebuild fund for essential service businesses. I'd say that they are taking longer to qualify people. So loans that would have taken place and been qualified in seconds or in minutes now can take as long as 10 days. And so that is finding people, you know, on the wrong end of the stick, in terms of they were used to a certain speed, and now, you know, that speed has greatly been slowed down. So that's an example of just the disruptive demand in financial services.
Yeah, absolutely. Financial services definitely are coming under fire, not only in Kenya, but globally. Of course, you know, when the economy is in a depression or a recession, as we are now, liquidity levels are low. And so this is expected. But at the same time, it also poses an opportunity to build a stronger financial system. You know, companies that were lending before now need to put a lot of attention to their risk mitigation process, you know, their loan recovery procedures, which I think would be a good thing going forward. And of course, we are hoping that, as the governor mentioned, that they are working towards a long-term sustainable solution with small mobile lenders, because we cannot deny the fact that most Kenyans, especially the young guys, you know, guys in campus or people who are searching for jobs, they rely on this to plug in short-term liquidity constraints. Now, I think we've talked a bit about financial services, so we'll jump to the next one, which was connectivity. Now, connectivity is very interesting globally right now, because people are working from home, people are studying from home, and so there's a lot of...
You can probably hear in the background...
Ah, well, actually, it's pretty clear. Your connectivity is good, okay. If I can put it that way. So perhaps now
We've got two kids under five. So I was just, you know, so I thought you might have been able to pick up on it. Keep going.
Well, I haven't picked up on them, but definitely pass them our regards. Maybe they can come and discuss one day the impact of COVID on their education and their learning, you know.
Okay. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I had them join me on a call. Actually, they joined me on a call probably every other day, if not every day. At least for one of the calls, I'll normally have them just come and say hi.
It's nice to have that moral support. You know, right now in COVID-19, everyone needs all the support they can gather.
For sure.
So, talk to us about connectivity.
If you don't mind, I've left a message or two in the chat. But I think connectivity. I think we could look at that and perhaps education, and then hoping that listeners could also just engage with the remaining aspects. And I'm pretty keen to just see people reach out to us and let us know what they think. So I think to look at connectivity, it's been very interesting to see that. I think my main feedback on this has been, you know, my team and I just looking at the landscape here, interesting conversations happening as far as free Wi-Fi. So Brick, which is the largest provider of free Wi-Fi, amongst the highest in the continent. I think for them, they've seen their bandwidth just really just hit the ceiling. So the number of people connecting, maybe there's, you know, some bumps here and there that people can move onto, onto all the different matatus and public transit aspects. But they had, you know, fixed solutions as well. And for me, speaking to them, it's been really just interesting to watch people's consumption go just through the roof. I think Safaricom went out to say and update people that I think Netflix traffic on their network had risen, I think, four times, just Netflix alone. And so overall, it's very interesting that this is what has stimulated consumption in what is a really memorable way. I think Twitter have said that they've almost doubled, and they've risen to the almost 6 million or just shy of 6 million monthly active users in Kenya, fourth most visited website. You have Facebook who also just seeing a tremendous growth, taking them well over the 10 million monthly active user mark, which had historically been an area where they would oscillate around there, and you could argue stagnate. It's not that, you know, people weren't using or coming, but that was an area which to hit that and pass it was a challenge. Even YouTube, I think in March I saw some stats that they moved from about 5 million monthly active users to the 7 million plus range. So interesting to just see people just say, I'm just going to consume content. Mm-hmm. Or internet, I think are an interesting one, because for them, they are in peri-urban, informal settlements and underserved areas, and they're seeing significant, again, redlining of their bandwidth, and just I'd say what I'd anticipate to be strong interest in usage. Now the challenge with all of these is when it's paid, you know, can people continue to pay? And so I think that's been one way. I think Safaricom doubled the speeds people can get at the same price, and the challenge might be that they might not be able to go back to the usual again, just in terms of setting a new normal and saying that they'll keep it going. So that's I think one aspect, just how the different ISPs, the internet service providers, work. Maybe one thing to add on this that I've not added yet, there is a local video conferencing platform called Gumzo, and my team and I actually gave it a test drive. So, you know, almost 10 of us, we did our daily huddle. We do a huddle for 10 minutes at 10 a.m. every day, just to connect and know what each person is working on, and just make sure at least, you know, we're there for each other and checking in on the workday. So yeah, we were able to use that. And while, you know, it's no Zoom, it's no Hangouts, it's no Teams, it's local and it works. And we, you know, at least I can say that firsthand. And it's been very interesting. I didn't know how it would work for us, but it worked really well. And I can recommend it because obviously, you know, everyone's looking to Zoom. Mm-hmm. We just did a platform review the other day, and it's, you know, top one, top two in both app stores, and has been for the last few months as people learn how to engage and link up with people there. So something worth worth noting.
Okay.
As far as maybe disruptive demand, I would probably say I'd say middle class consumers, you know, possibly experiencing fatigue, exhaustion, and mental health challenges just because of the restricted movement. We're even seeing like outright disobedience, you know, so people, you know, hosting parties or you know, just kind of flagrantly not abiding by the government directives. Part of that, I just, you know, it's just, I don't know, like just being inundated with just, you know, just connecting on screens, and I expect, you know, mental health challenges to be you know, an area where I think people need to pay close attention going forward. And there are some good conversations starting locally in Kenya and across the continent, but this is one where that hyper-connectivity, we're not sure what the results of that will be.
Okay. Yeah, definitely with being online a lot of the time, human beings are social beings, and we definitely need to have physical interactions. And perhaps just to finish off today's discussion, we've already done some 4 buckets out of 10. We can finish today by talking about only 5 of them, and perhaps if we do another podcast, we can do the remaining 5. So why don't you finish off by telling us about the impact of COVID-19 on digital services in the education sector?
Yeah, education is one which I think has had a lot of interest. You know, learners have had significant disruptions. I think, you know, Nendo, we published a landmark report last year. And one of the things we said was that if you are interested in cash, and cash is what drives an economy, then as Nendo, we want to point your attention towards megabytes and how megabytes drive the digital economy. You know, in Kenya, you know, 90, I want to say at least 96% of the market, you know, to my estimation, would be prepaid. So prepaid. And that just means that that every megabyte counts. And so when we're looking at education, you know, companies like Longhorn may have said, okay, our entire platform is going to be free. You won't have to pay for e-learning. However, if you have to pay in megabytes, you still have a price to pay. Mm. So when Safaricom and Airtel made the shift towards saying, look, Eneza Education with their Shupavu solution, ViewSasa and Longhorn are all free. So you can access them without paying for the data. I think that really opened up for me a very interesting, you know, new territory in learners developing and learning. Yes, of course, there's Zoom classes and things like that, but it's this e-learning where the data bundles don't apply that got our full attention. And I think that's something which we continue to monitor. We are curious the role of piracy in education. So if you're going to give me something which I have to access by streaming, soon enough, somebody's going to download it. Soon enough, they're going to put it on a flash disk, or going to put it on a CD, or and potentially just get it out into the masses. So we're curious what's going to happen there. And then apps like Zenda and Tubidi, which are about peer-to-peer downloading of content offline or sharing of content without consuming bundles, that's interesting to us in what it means for education, just opening that up. And then, yeah, we just think if anybody's in the textbook business, it's a tough time to be there. Publishers, really, really difficult time as far as we've been seeing, with them struggling to make sales. Especially in a time like this when schools aren't open and we're not sure when or how they'll reopen.
Actually, it's quite interesting, the impact on education, because most schools here on the sub-Saharan African region did not really have e-learning platforms, and now COVID-19 has put them in a situation where they have to innovate, or rather they will be phased out. And of course it's a challenge, it requires resources, but we also appreciate that some schools are making these steps, and maybe they might not otherwise have done so unless put in such extreme situations. As you say, we only hope that there will be protection of information and no infringement on copyrights, as may be prevalent in sharing of private content. Well, I think we have discussed a good chunk of the report. We've talked about transport, retail, financial services, connectivity, and we finished off with education. So perhaps we can finish off today's podcast with that. And if we are able to do another podcast, we can talk about the remaining buckets, which include entertainment, the food supplies,
yeah,
communication, healthcare, and finally income generation. Okay, so from our end, Mark, we are very thankful. You've really gone into the detail. And perhaps now you can share with our audience how they can get the report, also how they can get in touch with you in case they have any questions or comments or feedback regarding what we've talked about today.
Yeah, sure. So, they can engage with me or engage with Nendo on Twitter. My Twitter handle is mkaigwa. Nendo's Twitter handle is at Nendo254. And every Tuesday, Nendo will publish a quick snapshot of what's been happening on social media in the last week using real data, just basically every tweet and a lot of the public Facebook posts within reason and within the data privacy restrictions, and just giving a lens and a view of that. For the actual 10-sector infographic, that can be found at Nendo, that's NENDO, nendo.co.ke/COVID. So that's where people can find that, is nendo.co.ke/COVID. And I'd recommend that they sign up to our newsletter. It's called the Letter N. And that's really where they can get key insights from me, links to read. And, we have a really great community of people there who, yeah, they just kind of sit it's kind of like my personal soapbox of where I'll share what I'm reading, watching, listening to, and key links. And we've got some really great testimonials and all sorts of people from, CEOs to academics and just a range of people in between. So hoping that between those places to find the infographic, to find the landing page, to find, us on social media. We've got a number of ways people can keep in touch and benefit from all of our public-facing research.
Awesome. And I think they can also get in touch with me on Twitter at Prince_Muraguri, or also through the official Kenyan Wall Street page on Twitter, which is at Kenyan Wall Street. From our end, Mark, we thank you so much for your time. We hope that you keep keeping safe, keep sanitizing, and all the best. We hope to get in touch with you soon and cover the rest of the buckets.
No, absolutely. I think, wishing everybody listening to this stay safe, keep social distancing. Let's follow where just the science and evidence and consensus is telling us to, and the respective government directives, and hoping everybody can stay safe, and wishing them well. Thank you.
Thanks to you. We close it at that, folks. Thank you very much for listening. Please give us your feedback, your comments, and we look forward to getting in touch with you again in the next podcast. Goodbye.